Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
Ian
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
Ian's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter has nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
And welcome, everyone, to ENN on a Thursday evening already in New York City. We'll start off tonight by saying good evening to Michael.
Please stay safe, everybody. Stay indoors. Be very wash handy.
And good evening to Don.
The players don't have to be talking about their chicken.
Take care of y'all chicken.
Andrew texted me during the last segment. He said that Don saying, quote, "I did a college radio show at Ramapo called The Beast is Unleashed." I think he said, actually, Andrew, it was a heavy metal show called The Beast is Unleashed. That might be a two seed in the, quote, most Don LaGreca sentence of all time. And then he followed it up by saying, Michael saying, "I don't give people a second chance," might be a one seed for the Michael, the ultimate Michael sentence. So really, some important stuff going on right now.
Well, isn't the old saying, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me." You don't get a chance to fool me twice.
But here's the thing. Forgiveness has to go beyond these catchphrases that you use.
Yeah.
Sorry doesn't fix the lamp and fool me once. That doesn't go into the teachings of some of the sort of more wise people we've ever had in society.
If somebody does you wrong, You would give that opportunity to a person to do it again to you?
But that's what everyone does that with people they care about all the time.
No. You crazy. You're letting evil in if you do that.
What? Don?
If somebody did you wrong once before, why would you give them an opportunity to do it again? I'm not saying
because of
the
concept
person.
Of forgiveness. It's putting someone else first. You're saying I know this is a risk. Because this hurt me once before, but I have faith that this is a good person. Right. So I'm allowing them to make a mistake because, I don't know, maybe you believe you're perfect and not one person out there in the world would tell a story where you're the heel in it that would go against some of the stories we've heard, in the last 2 weeks. But unless you're infallible, how could you not believe in forgiveness for anyone?
Especially when we're talking about an 18 or 19-year-old kid in college, making a mistake that now he has to pay for the rest of his life? Didn't beat me with a baseball bat or anything. It was just having some fun, which happens.
But according to Peter, if somebody did beat you with a baseball bat and then 20 years later said, I was out of my mind. I'm really sorry. You give him a second chance, you'd forgive him?
I would never set a limitation to what I'm capable of forgiving someone for.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say it. You can print it. You could put it on cards and placards. You're a much better person than me, Gandhi, because I wouldn't.
But no. That is true. So we agree. That's the only point I'm trying to say.
You're a much better guy than
me. Is that by saying that you refuse to forgive should not be something. Like, are you going to teach your kids don't forgive people?
Yes. Oh, it's in the process right now.
Well, see, that's...
But you're saying that's not a good person.
No. You obviously putting yourself... As Mike Clevenger would say, you're on a pedestal.
No, but how am I on the pedestal? How am I on the pedestal, though? If you don't think it's a better quality, then I'm not on a pedestal.
But you're admitting it. I'm just giving you what you want. You believe you're better than me because you will forgive somebody. I won't.
But you just said that's a bad guy. Instead of trying to be a good guy, you're just embracing the bad guy and hand it down to your children.
I'm being hyperbolic. I don't think it's a bad guy at all. I think I'm being very, very smart about it. I don't give people a second chance to screw me over.
Well, then
Sorry.
You're going to miss out on having some great people in your life, Michael.
Nah,
because
I'm
you know
good.
What?
Thanks.
Sometimes
As you would say,
things
I'm good.
Happen when
you
allow
say,
people
good.
In.
Everybody gets allowed in. Everybody gets a chance. They just don't get a second one.
One chance.
Yeah, they don't get a chance to do me wrong.
I gotta tell you, Michael, I
you love him. You love him like a brother.
But do you realize you're going to have some very difficult decisions to make with your kids? Because I am sure they're going to do some things that they're going to have to apologize
for.
And under your philosophy,
That's completely different. That's blood. Okay, so your kids get chances to screw up over and over and over again. You hope that they don't. But some stranger or some friend did you wrong, and you're going to give them an opportunity to do it again? Sorry, not me.
So the line is blood.
The line is blood. Blood supersedes everything.
Guy was nice enough to apologize for something he did 25 years ago.
And sent you
that
nuts,
I had pretty much forgotten about.
Which you could have choked on.
Well, I didn't do that. Just because I don't get in the habit of eating food from people I don't know.
And why? Because I taught you that. Because don't trust people. People send cookies to the station, won't do it. We'll give it to the animals that'll eat anything, but we won't eat it.
Wow. Do you know, that really nice guy who comes to a lot of our live events, he brought us all delicious, like store-bought but freshly made donuts at the Christmas party this year.
I won't eat. I love the guy.
No, that's everyone. That's different because he's there. I mean, he's not going to poison us while he's standing there.
Michael wouldn't eat it.
I wouldn't eat it.
But mailed food is a different story. But the fact that Michael,
anybody who eats anything that's sent through the mail from somebody you don't know, you're out of your mind. I don't care if it's wrapped.
Right, but to not eat the donuts that the listener brought in is standing right there.
Well, maybe he would love seeing us choke on it.
Excuse me?
He didn't seem like...
I know, but you know what? A lot of people don't seem bad, but they are.
You gotta let people in, Michael.
I'm 59. I'm not changing my
So, Michael, what would you have done? I'll end it after this, but I just have to see how you react to this point. What would you have done if you were in my Alternatives to Violence class when we had a guest speaker who came in and talked about how... years after her daughter's brutal murder, she had befriended the murderer.
Yeah, I think you've told me this. You're out of your mind.
Hey, Craig McTavish, former Ranger. He was a Boston Bruin. Drinking and driving, he killed a child. The family actually took him in.
Okay,
Don. Befriended him.
You have two children you love more than your life itself.
Could we don't put someone in the position to say that right now. And
no matter what, that's a different wiring than I have.
But it tells you is that under certain circumstances, you can forgive.
And well, it's
not a blanket forgiveness. I never bought that from the religious standpoint that you're instantly forgiven you say you're sorry.
Right, I agree.
But you judge each individual, and if it seems genuine and it's a mistake, I mean, I think.
Let me amend one thing.
Okay.
I give people second chances that have screwed up in life. Like, I love Daryl Strawberry. He was at my wedding.
That's big of you.
All right? And he did a lot of terrible things.
Not to you.
But when you do it to me, I'm not going to give you another chance to do it again to me. That's all. I don't think that's so unreasonable.
So real quick. Okay, let's go to Daryl, for example.
Yeah.
If during Daryl's worst days, for some reason, he'd hit hard times.
Right.
And you guys were hanging out, and in the midst of his worst parts of addiction, you realize that he stole $200 from your wallet.
He's out.
And so then everything else in his story is the same. Mm-hmm. The comeback's the same. The man he is now is the same. Everything's the same.
Out.
But he stole $200 for cocaine.
Out. Out.
So think about what a wonderful person that's now no longer in your life. Because he's bounced back. He's become a better person. He's helping other people. So you're punishing yourself.
I have one of my best friends in my life was a drug addict at one point, and I had gotten my teeth pulled, and he snuck off to where my pills were and stole a few of my Percocets and replaced them with, like, BS pills.
Placebos.
Placebos, if you will. Is that person out?
Michael, you might have him killed.
I just enjoy it because it's a fascinating study of the human psyche.
Let's end it this way. Michael, be better.
you know what, Don? I we're doing some of this for comedic effect, but it comes from real places, okay?
That's right.
You've known me for 19 years.
That's right.
I'd say, and you're 52 years old.
I'll be 53 on Saturday.
All right? You've probably, in your 53 years on Earth, not met four people better than me.
Can't be true.
Better person than me. You just haven't.
It's not. You've forfeited yourself in the competition by what you said today alone.
Just how I treat people that treat me well. I'm giving you a lot of leeway. It's probably two people that you've never met better than me. Nicer than me.
This is
more loving than me.
I'm going to answer it honestly.
No,
that's what we do on this show.
You sure you want to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
There is probably, you might be tied with a few other people for number one in the way you treat me.
Okay. Oh, that's strong. However.
But quality of person, not in the top 10.
Oh, my God.
That doesn't make sense.
You did it to yourself. You did it to yourself, Michael. You absolutely set yourself up for that.
I'm fine with the way I treat him. That's the only way he should judge me, the way I treat him.
That's fair, but you were trying to build yourself up to be like an angel. No.
I am an angel. I'm one of the nicest people on earth.
You are you're a great guy, by the way. I tell everyone.
I agree with that.
I think you're a great guy. Another great guy would be Jeff Passan. He's one of our favorites. If he ever crosses,
he better not cross me.
Yeah, if he crosses Michael, I'll kill him. But he spoke about how the players want the owners to open the books.
What they want to know is what the local and national television revenue looks like for Major League Baseball in 2020. They also want to know what sponsorship looks like, as well as what the projections are for each team in terms of losing money, ostensibly, by the end of the year. What they really want to know is how much revenue are we actually dealing with here?
Well, one thing I want to throw back at Peter. You didn't like that Michael Jordan was like me. You were fine with that he did it, that he was like that way.
What do you mean? I said he was a psychopath.
Well, okay, but did you think he's a bad person? Said he was wired differently.
I think he's got a lot of problems. I think Michael is an active addiction. I think he's a major addict and needs serious help and is not ever happy, is perpetually angry at everyone, never lets go. He actually does sound like you. Never lets go.
Well, I'm really not that happy, but I'm not angry at people. I'm not happy a lot. I should be happier than I am.
Exactly. But see, don't you see it? You should be happier than you are, and yet you're telling us about how you choose and are proud of holding on to pain and anger.
Right, because people deserve that.
But it's only punishing you, not them.
No, that's not why I'm not happy.
Don, he just ignored what was a profound statement on who he is.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. But getting back to Jeff Passan, Michael, it's always a give and take in negotiations. Fair?
Yep.
All right, we'll open the books. What are you giving back to us? I'll open the books. I'll show you everything you need to see. What are you giving us? Give us a cap. Give us something back, right? I mean, they're making a demand to open the books. What are you willing? Because what if you see backs up what the owners are saying? Are you gonna take the information and still make a stand and say, no, we're not going to do it? I mean, so if there's a give and take, Michael, they're making a demand.
It's a brilliant point. I don't think they're under any circumstances, even if they were shown a book, would they ever agree to a salary cap. I just don't think they would. So stop asking for the books.
Right.
But maybe they're asking for the books to see how much money we lost, and they would agree to some kind of lessening of their salaries this year. But in terms of showing us your books to show us exactly what you make, and then we'd agree to a cap, there's no way they would agree to a cap. And one other thing that Buster said that I want to bring in, too. The players really are upset, because they really got taken to the woodshed, the last collective bargaining agreement. Your fault.
Exactly.
You signed it. You negotiated it. You didn't see the little pitfalls in there that they put in, the little minefields. That's your ineptitude, not the owner's.
That's what we say about the NFL players all the time, too, complaining about a CBA you agreed to. Like, come on, I mean, and I know it sounds like we're coming on the side of the owners here, and I'm not. I think they're both wrong here, but just shows you the divide is just so wide. Listen to the Buster, Michael. How can you feel good at all?
Well, and now Max Scherzer has weighed in. He is in the MLBPA's 8-player executive subcommittee, and he had a statement on Twitter last night that said, quote, "There's no justification for players to accept a second pay cut in order to play an abbreviated 2020 season." And now I know that gets you red hot, Michael.
I, ju- I, I don't understand why you're negotiating in the press. Just tell Tony Clark to tell Rob Manfred this is a non-starter. Well, again, you're making it out to the The players are trying to win a PR war they cannot win because for some reason they are never the people that the fans give a break to. And I'm not saying the players are wrong. I'm not saying the players are on the wrong side. I'm not taking sides on this. But the players are trying to win an unwinnable war. They're trying to get people who think they could do what they can do and they would do it for free. They're trying to get them on their side. It's not going to work. You're just burying yourself further.
But what that tells you, Peter, when they throw out the word pay cut or the phrase pay cut, they really believe that they have a right to be paid for 162 games. Like they believe they gave something back. Like they thought they were being charitable. They really believe probably in their heart, hey, tough. There's a pandemic, tough. It's like in Goodfellas, I can't give the phrase.
Bleep, you pay me.
Rent went down, blank you, pay me. Like it doesn't. So that's the way that. So they feel like they really gave from the heart, Michael. Oh, we're not asking to be paid for 162 games. Well, that's really charitable of you, considering you got to play 82. You know, so that's what I take from them saying pay cut. They believe they gave like the greatest Christmas present of all time to the owners.
I got to tell you. These guys, most of the players are great guys, but they see the world through a lens that's not realistic, especially in this day and time in our planet's history. This is not the stuff to be making public. You look bad. Pipe down. Do your negotiating behind closed doors, and you're not going to win the public affection. You're just not. You know what the public thinks about players? Shut up and play. We've seen it. They don't want to hear it.
I bet you a lot of these players are living in Florida, Arizona, and because I haven't heard a peep from any Met or Yankee, right? Have you?
No.
Probably because they realize, because they see it. They turn on the news. They're playing in New York. A lot of them live in New York. They see what's going on. I'm just wondering if a lot of these players, like we had Daryl Strawberry on in Missouri and St. Louis, it's not a thing. What was the stat you looked up, Peter? Like they got 4,000 cases and like 40 deaths in the state of Missouri. Like, so maybe it's just not real to them because they're not living through what we're living. And when I turn on the news and I'm getting updates on my phone, I got my governor telling me how many people die a day. There's more people dying a day in New Jersey than some states have had during the last 2.5 months.
Exactly, which is a very – it does make it totally different. Let's move to the NBA and hear from Patrick Beverley, who was on SportsCenter. And he said that the players would like more communication from the NBA.
Communication. That's it. You know, it's just sad that we got to hear about things happening, you know, in our workplace and stuff like that via Twitter. I mean, it's good, it's entertaining, it's fun, but just want more communication. Like, let us know. Don't just string us along. Man. If the NBA is starting, if the NBA is finished, just let us know. I challenge the NBA. We bled blood, sweat, and tears for this league, and you know, we feel like it should be a certain amount of respect that. No, we should be knowing what's going on.
Whoa. Your complaint isn't with the NBA. It's with your union leadership. Michelle Roberts should be telling you what's going on.
You
think that the commissioner of basketball should be calling every NBA player? That's why you have a representative that leads your union who's a really smart woman. Michelle Roberts should be telling the players what's going on. If they're uninformed, it's because they're not told by their union.
I have no evidence of this, Michael, other than just a hunch. I have a feeling things aren't going great in the NBA dealing with this. I think they are butting heads a bit. They're smart enough not to make it public. But when you hear a quote like that, I'm not sure they're singing Kumbaya during these negotiations. Just a hunch, just a feel.
But I don't think it's about money, though.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think they're really butting heads over how to make this happen. Like, the NHL got out because they were able to make it work. Like, they were on the same page. They were able to make it work. I think that there's some things. And I think most of it's just about who stays and who goes. I think Damian Lillard gave us a little indication. I think they cannot agree on the amount of teams to continue because I think there's a lot of players on bad teams that just flat out aren't going to come to work. So they're trying to be fair of allowing certain teams to get in, but what format seems to fit them? What works best for them?
Yeah.
I just don't get why he expects the NBA to
By the way, what I wanted to add was I think that there's a disconnect. I've said this before. I don't think players understand the relationship between them, their union, and the league. And I only identify with them in the sense that I am barely ever in communication with my union. And I've had almost no situations come up in which I've actually reached out to my union. So I can only imagine that as much as we think it's different, it's probably not, and they just don't realize it.
But a lot of it's also trying to be proactive. You're happy, you're in a situation, but if something was going down, Peter, you would be on the phone with somebody to get that information.
Yeah, I guess if I was worried I was being asked to do something I didn't necessarily want to do, or a pay cut was happening that I was concerned about, then maybe that would be a conversation.
If something similar was going down with us, that was going down with the NBA, I think you would be on top. Maybe you wouldn't have a complete working knowledge of the negotiations, but you'd be in contact with somebody that would let you know what was happening. You wouldn't be completely in the dark.
No, but I did. We did have some sort of conversations like that, and I didn't tell the union about it.
Yes.
Oh, you did, right?
Because
good. So you handled it for us.
Well, because I've taken, because of how long I've been here, I've kind of taken on that shop steward thing where I've had it. No, because I think it's important.
To keep the union in the loop on what's going on.
The union has reached out to me, and I've reached out to people about like things that are going on. And if you want to ignore it, you can ignore it. If you have a question, you can have a question, whatever. But everybody at 98.7 knows who to get in touch with if they have a question.
In the old days, if you were the player rep from your team, there's a good chance you get traded. So now what the players have done that's smart, they have somebody who's really important, who is a big money player, and they have that person be the player rep. Because nobody wants to be told what to do. That they're the one that's spreading, quote-unquote, the bad news. In the old days, those players used to be traded or released.
I was going to say, because if the player rep is flotsam and jetsam, as you like to say,
they're gone.
Well, yeah, then you just get rid of them.
But if Beverly's got a question, he knows exactly who to call to find out information. So he may not do it, but he there's no way he, if he's in the dark, it's because that's on him.
Let's hear from Dana White on SportsCenter talking about giving us an update on quote unquote Fight Island.
Fight Island is coming along beautifully and should be done by mid-June. And, I'll probably know at the beginning of next week when we can get rolling over there. And I'm hoping mid-June. I'm planning on going over there for the first fight and probably staying there for a month. I'll probably be there the entire month of July.
Okay, going over there. Where's there? Where exactly is Fight Island?
Oh, we are bringing that one today.
Oh, come on.
we're still getting this thing together in a place. See, when I announce it, I actually want pictures of the infrastructure and the things that are built when I actually announce where Fight Island is. So soon, my friend, soon.
But by the way, by the time they announce Fight Island, Vegas will be open for business. Right? You're making a whole island. You're telling me that we're not a few. Vegas is opening tomorrow, right?
Supposed to, yes.
Three people at a table.
So three people at a table in casinos are opening. You're telling me they're not going to be able to have empty arena fights at T-Mobile Arena soon?
I heard Fight Island is Randall's Island.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, right. Very close.
It's Fight Island is the old nickname for Staten Island.
Oh, really?
A lot of people don't know that, yeah.
Is that true, or are you making that up?
No, I made that up.
I've never heard that.
Made it up.
As somebody that follows both, Peter, intensely, is this statement off base? The UFC wants to be wrestling. They're just not good enough to do it.
Wow.
He wants to be McMahon so bad.
Oh, no. He wants that Dana's desire to be Vince McMahon. I think he's emulated a lot of what he's done off of Vince McMahon. For sure, 100%. If you watch their show, from the entrances to the pre-fight packages to the guys having characters and the in-ring promos, I think the in-octagon promos, I should say, I always think that's been true, Dom. But in this case, you know, he's a lot more publicly vocal than Vince McMahon is. Vince does not... I mean, they couldn't be more opposite in that regard. I mean, Dana White would show up to the opening of an envelope. Vince McMahon, you cannot get an interview with. That's well, not because, a thing
because,
that happens.
Because wrestling is huge. That's what I mean by that. Well, not
UFC's
good enough.
But now huge UFC too. Is huge.
But wrestling is so much bigger. I think there's a lot of wrestling envy with UFC.
Well, listen, I love the take. I'm here to support it. And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned it, Dom, because I just released today, wherever anyone gets podcasts, my sit down with The Undertaker. He did a lot of interviews. He did a lot of mainstream interviews with people like Bill Simmons and people who are not the world's biggest wrestling fans. I'd like to think that the one I did today is the like ultimate wrestling fans interview with The Undertaker. So if you get a chance, go search for Cheap Heat wherever you get podcasts. And on this day in 2006.
The pitch. Hits one high. Hits it deep to center.
Barry Bonds surpasses the Babe, and that'll do it for ENN on this Thursday evening.
Barry Bonds also involved, Don, you'll remember this, I think it was 22 years ago. Don't hold me to it. 22 years ago today.
1998.
Buck Showalter.
Showalter.
Intentionally walked Barry Bonds with the bases loaded to drive in a run. It was in the ninth inning, and then the next batter hit a screaming line drive to right that was caught, so it turned out. And Buck had a great answer afterward. He said, "There's always a base open. This time the base was home plate."
I love Buck.
And if you look at Barry Bonds, right, when Buck motions to intentionally walk him, he's stunned, absolutely stunned.
But what do you remember the score of the game?
Yeah, it was 7-5, and the bases were loaded, and Bonds was up with two outs in the ninth, so he walked him to make it 7-6.
And they're two outs?
Yeah.
100% the right decision.
A lot of managers wouldn't do it.
Analytically, it was probably the right move too, right?
I would have to think analytically it was.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, and on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN New York 98.7.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.